Running connects us. The early mornings, the personal bests, the shared finish lines. At Marathon Sports, we're proud to be part of that journey with you. Our team helps you find shoes that fit your stride, apparel that feels good, and gear that keeps you moving. Stop by one of 28 New England locations or shop online at marathonsports.com. Marathon Sports, inspiring movement in everyone.
Welcome, welcome, welcome to the Three Down Nation podcast. I'm Justin Dunk, joined by John Hodge and JC Abbott. Fellas, we got some news for the people. Three Down Nation has officially been acquired by Harvard Media in, I guess, what we could call an acqui-hire deal. So for all the people out there wondering, ain't nothing going to change except for what I believe, and I'll just speak for myself here. I'll let you guys chime in, to be a great long-term partnership with Harvard Media. That said, nothing is going to change. I've seen some people online wonder about, oh, well, Justin Dunk, he's already part of the Riders broadcast on 620 CKRM and that go out throughout the province and honestly are heard around the world, and it seems like he's treading lightly on some topics. I'm like, what are y'all talking about? You been listening to the podcast or not? If the Riders don't play well, I say that they don't play well. And by the way, I say it on the post-game show as well. We call it how we see it. That was part of the allure, let's say, for Harvard Media bringing us into their family. And I think the upside for us is that Harvard Media is well positioned from a business standpoint and, more importantly, the sales department to really help the site reach its full potential. So I'm excited about this partnership. And, you know, as much as I joke about the fans out there, the fans hold us accountable, just like we do to the teams, the coaches, the players in the Canadian Football League and the other leagues that we cover. So if you feel like something is off, we do want to hear that to make sure we are balanced. But that will continue to be our aim, is be fair and balanced in our coverage of every single team and league that we report on Three Down Nation. John Hodge, what say you about this deal?
I think it's great. I'm really excited. I'm really proud to be part of the Harvard Media family. And the only thing that, I mean, we talked about a ton of aspects of this deal. The only thing that literally never came up was, oh, and you guys are going to be easy on the Riders, or, oh, you guys are going to push this, you guys are going to push that. We have full 100% editorial control of what we report. And I mean, I think just from a common sense standpoint, it would be weird to buy something and then try to change it. Right. If I was trying to buy McDonald's, I wouldn't say, okay, but enough with these cheeseburgers, we're going to Froyo. Right. That doesn't make sense. So Harvard's on board with exactly the product that we have created and consistently churned out for these many, many years. I love the quote that you had, Justin, in the press release, which was three downs, no days off. Admittedly, I might have been the first one to say that, but I'm happy to give you the credit for the quote.
No, take the credit.
That was, well, yeah, I might have said it, but that's okay. We are a hive mind, the three of us, in many ways. So three downs, no days off, full editorial control. We're going to tell it like it is. Well, also, and Justin, you said we're held accountable by our readers. We're also held accountable by players, as evidenced by AJ Allen at Grey Cup, telling us why and how our All-Star list was off, right? So we're held accountable by teams and players and coaches and all kinds of things, just like we hold them to account. So I think it's a great ecosystem we have here, where we've got this really nice kind of grouping of these different entities, whether it's, again, readers, listeners, whether it's us as reporters, whether it's other reporters in the media space, other outlets in the media space, whether it's teams, whether whatever, right? We're all accountable to each other. We all want to be fair, but we also want to be legit, right? So that's what we strive to do here, and I'm really excited to continue doing that under this new corporate lineup.
It's a really boring podcast when we all agree on a topic, gentlemen. But I have to agree with what you've laid out here about this deal. The bullet points, same great content, more support to make it even better. I think that is what we're drawing from this partnership. There has been no instructions in terms of changing what we do, but now we have the resources and the team behind us to do some of the things that we've dreamed about for a long time doing, and some of the different projects and initiatives, content ideas that have been kicking on the back burner. Those can be put to the forefront in the future because of this deal. So there are exciting things to come. If we truly are a hive mind, gentlemen, I'll use the Star Trek reference. Resistance is futile. Three down is coming for you.
Oh, I like it.
I don't think Justin's seen Star Trek because it's not Seinfeld, but I appreciate the reference.
I think that people should know, and I'll share a quick story here, because when I first met people from Harvard Media was, I believe, in February 2024. I went out to Calgary, and I walk into the meeting room. Matt Hill is there, who is part of the illustrious Hill family that owns Harvard Media. And literally, the first question he had for me, fellas, was, how can I get involved with Three Down Nation? He absolutely loves the Canadian Football League. He loves the CFL. Obviously, there's a passion there for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders with 620 CKRM, having the Rough Riders radio rights for longer than I've been alive. I don't even know how many years it is exactly, but it's a long time. And then his second question was, because Matthew Betts had just signed with the Detroit Lions, and that's his favorite NFL team, he's like, how do you think Betts is going to do there? Give me the inside scoop. So he is all in on football, and I think that's why we are all in on this partnership, just like Harvard Media is. And also, I think that that combined thought process, love and passion for the Canadian Football League and football in Canada in general. Like, I don't want to just focus on the CFL, fellas, for this partnership, right? We have seen from the traffic numbers how interested people are, for example, in the Saskatchewan Huskies. And the more that we do U Sports content, I think people out there are showing us that they would like some more of that. So whether it's the Canadian Football League, the Canadian Junior Football League, U Sports football, whether it's guys going across the border to the NCAA, Canadians playing in the NFL, perhaps we even get into covering some of the rising stars in Canadian high schools and tracking them. That is, to me, what this partnership is about. It's going to allow us the opportunity in the long term, I believe, to be very successful from a business standpoint. And that's going to benefit our readers, our viewers, our listeners, because we're going to be able to cover more. So thank you very much to Harvard Media for the trust. And specifically, I need to shout out John Hodge and JC Abbott, because they have trusted me through this process to get us to this point. And the work that these two do, in my opinion, is unmatched. With all due respect to our media colleagues, you guys are absolute grinders. And it needs to be noted that we literally have, for the most part, 24/7, what I would call news desk coverage. We are on it all the time. Sometimes people might say, you know, that's kind of a workaholic mentality. But for the most part, I think all of us would agree that we love doing what we do. We have a passion for doing what we do. But then there's also the flip side of that it wouldn't be possible without literally the millions, and I mean millions, last year, for people that don't know, in 2024, we had over 3 million unique visitors to the website. So even though our social media might look small to people, the site is our bread and butter. So we want to feed it and then also perhaps do more podcasts and video content in the future. But we're going to focus on our bread and butter for now. And we do really appreciate the support from literally the millions of Canadians that come and visit the website on a yearly basis. You know, the hundreds of thousands that visit it on a monthly basis and even a daily basis. And then the people from outside Canada as well, because we've seen, for example, our US traffic tick up over the years and people literally checking the site from all around the world. So I think you guys deserve a massive shout out to help us get to the point where we've gotten to. And I'm just so jacked up to see what the future holds for this website, for this partnership with Harvard Media. Anything else you guys want to add before we move on?
No, let's get to the show, baby.
All right. We're discussing our preliminary top 50 CFL pending free agent rankings.
CFL players who could earn NFL opportunities.
The Blue Bombers likely making a change at offensive coordinator.
The BC Lions unveiling some details about their touchdown Kelowna games.
Marshawn Lynch FaceTiming Corey Mace during Saskatchewan's Grey Cup parade.
And Mike Kelly making an appearance at this year's Media Hall of Fame induction breakfast. But first, the Toronto Argonauts are still without a head coach as Orlando Steinauer and Corey Mace reportedly turned down interviews for the position. Those who have reportedly interviewed include Ottawa special teams coordinator Rick Campbell and much of the Argos' existing staff, including co-defensive coordinators Kevin Iben and Jason Shivers, receivers coach Pete Costanza, special teams coordinator Mickey Donovan, and quarterbacks coach Mike Miller. The Double Blue are also interested in longtime CFL QB and coach Kent Austin, who is currently coaching at Auburn. Who will be the Argonauts' next head coach, gentlemen?
That is a very difficult question to answer because I think this process still has a little ways to play out here. I do think that there are some front runners because of some stuff that I've heard behind the scenes, but really, I think it's kind of wide open at the moment, right? You could make an argument for some of the guys on the current staff. And, you know, I look at a guy like Mickey Donovan, who's been at the U Sports level, been at the CFL level, and is in that sort of special teams coordinator line where we've seen special teams coordinators become successful CFL head coaches in our league. You know, Kevin Iben is a longtime Toronto Argo from his playing days and now into his coaching career. There's some people that think that you could go the offensive route with perhaps Pete Costanza, and there's obviously a whole bunch of names here, but I do think Rick Campbell's going to get a potential long look here from the Argos. And from what I've been told, at least atop the Argos wish list, would be Kent Austin. But that process needs to play out. Auburn is playing what I believe is going to be their final game over the weekend here with the Tigers. And then let's see if he's even really interested in perhaps taking that bench boss job with Toronto. Then you look at some of the other names in the Canadian Football League that, at least at this point, we haven't reported or don't know that the Argos have talked to. And I would look at a guy like Noel Thorpe in Montreal and wonder, hey, if you bring that guy over and he implements his defense and can have a solid offensive coordinator along with him, that could be a person perhaps that the Argos target with some of the relationships that he has with the people in Toronto. I'm not discounting others. I'm just trying to look at logical people, right? The name atop most people's head coaching candidate list is going to be Mark Mueller, but he ain't leaving Saskatchewan. That's not a thing that's going to happen. The setup in Toronto is not ideal. And I think that's where this discussion needs to focus, is the fact that MLSE, Keith Pelley, and the Toronto Argonauts essentially chose Michael Pinball Clemens and John Murphy over Ryan Dinwiddie, which is, at this moment in time, astounding, because I think the Argos thought they would get Mike O'Shea and go on their merry way. That hasn't happened. So I think this process has taken on a new life that perhaps the Double Blue didn't even anticipate.
I think currently on staff, the only person with a contract for 2026 that's guaranteed is Jason Shivers, who came aboard as the team's co-defensive coordinator, taking over for William Fields, who had been the co-defensive coordinator in 2024 and subsequently left to become the defensive coordinator in Ottawa, where he's now in a roundabout way been reunited with Ryan Dinwiddie. Outside of that, I've been led to believe basically all of Toronto's coaching staff, all of the assistants, including all of these guys who did head coaching interviews, are under kind of team option contracts where essentially, I believe it's December 15th, the date is, the team can either choose to pick them up or not pick them up. I even had some person suggest to me that the contracts would have been guaranteed for 26 had Dinwiddie stayed, but there was a clause that if Dinwiddie left for another job, they reverted to this type of kind of team option pickup. So on the one hand, you can say as the Toronto Argonauts, well, let's promote from within, pick up the options in all these deals and run it back with basically the same coaching staff minus RD, which is the league-wide nickname for Ryan Dinwiddie for fans who might not know. Or you can go the opposite route, which, you know, if it is Kent Austin, if it is Noel Thorpe or some other type of outsider, then you could theoretically say, okay, we're going to bring in a new head coach. They're going to have the opportunity to hire basically their entire new staff, whoever they want. Shives, again, is the only person under contract for 2026. And in that case, I think a lot of these assistants would be going north to Ottawa, where they would then join Ryan Dinwiddie on that new staff with the Red Blacks. That being said, who's the head coach going to be? That's a great question. I think Kent Austin is an attractive option for this reason, boys. If there's one thing Kent Austin has consistently done, it is turn a stinker into a winner in record time, right? He doesn't necessarily have longevity, right? If you look at how his tenure ended with the Hamilton Tiger Cats, it was not pretty. But he took that team to a Grey Cup year one. He did the same thing with the Saskatchewan Roughriders when he was their head coach in 2007. Like, this is a guy who can come in, take a less than ideal situation, right? Take chicken, you know what, and turn it into chicken salad. So from that perspective, I get that the Argonauts are interested, especially because after winning a Grey Cup in 2024, this team obviously hit the skids in 2025 and is in need of a refresh. I think the fact that you've got two competent quarterbacks in Toronto, including one who's been an MOP, is attractive, right? When you're looking to go somewhere as a head coach, you don't want to go somewhere where there's no quarterback. That's a great way to get fired. So I do think there are some pluses here, but there's obviously some minuses as well. Not stellar fan support in Toronto. You're playing 12 away games in 2026, including the three hardest places to play. You have to go to Winnipeg twice. You have to go to Saskatchewan twice. You have to go to Hamilton twice, maybe even three times, depending on how the schedule ends up shaking out between the Battle of Ontario. But regardless, there's reasons to go for some of these outsiders. There's reasons to not go. And I think in terms of the internal candidates, these are all people who probably should have an opportunity to be a head coach, right? Whether it's Rick Campbell, an outsider who's done it before, but you know, a guy like Kevin Iben, if you were to cut Kevin Iben, I'm pretty sure double blue blood would pour out of him. He's been in the organization for that long, right? And you mentioned Mickey Donovan with his U Sports background, Pete Costanzo, who's done great things with CFL offenses, right? These are all guys who I think would be good internal hires. So I'm interested to see what happens with the Argonauts. I had one source tell me they expected this to be done by the end of this week, but that was also before Kent Austin, those rumors really started swirling. So we'll have to wait and see what the Argonauts end up choosing to do.
The element that I don't think has been discussed enough here when you're talking about who you're going to bring in as the head coach is Chad Kelly, right? You've got an MOP caliber quarterback who has not played in a calendar year, who is extremely tight with Ryan Dinwiddie, who has now left Ottawa. And I'm sure Dinwiddie would love to be able to trade for Chad Kelly if that was something that the Argos wanted to do. But presuming that they want to keep Kelly in the building and they want to keep Kelly happy once he returns to the field next season, you want to find a head coach who can mess with Kelly, who is, as we all know, a bit of a mercurial figure in terms of his attitude and his approach to football. I think two of the candidates that we've listed make a lot of sense from that perspective. And one of them is Kent Austin, right? He's got enough clout that Chad Kelly is going to respect a guy like Kent Austin coming into the building, having played the position that Chad Kelly plays. And in fact, they share an alma mater. Both of them are Ole Miss quarterbacks. So I don't know this for a fact, but presumably they've had some interactions in the past, or they're at least aware of each other through mutual connections through their school. I think if Austin did want to leave the NCAA and come back north to Southern Ontario, where his wife is from, that makes a lot of sense. Money is not going to be an issue for him, right? He's going to be paid out presumably by Auburn for the next several years because they're going to want to bring in a new staff once they find a replacement for Hugh Freeze, and that's going to mean paying out Kent Austin. That will give him the flexibility to take a job in Toronto and sort of sit on his, not rush into another opportunity down south if he doesn't want to. The other candidate that I don't think has gotten enough discussion is Mike Miller. Because if there is one person in the CFL that Chad Kelly absolutely adores besides Ryan Dinwiddie, it is Mike Miller, his QB coach. We saw the impact it had when Mike Miller was not able to be with him for a stretch in 2023 and some of the issues that he had going into the playoffs, that game where he told us that he suffered a concussion. One of the other things that he talked about was not having Miller there and the impact that it had on him going into that game. He trusts him implicitly, and he's an offensive mind, which has, you know, he's reportedly interviewing with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers for their offensive coordinator position. That's not something you want to let walk out of the building easily. You don't want to let somebody that your quarterback trusts go easily. And I think you think long and hard about Mike Miller as a potential head coaching candidate for those reasons.
Let me just clear up a couple of things. You said mess. You meant mesh with Chad Kelly. Kent Austin has 1 year left on his deal with the Auburn Tigers for 2026. So he wouldn't be paid out for several. As you said, JC, it would be 1 year. And I think the rest of that was mostly on point. So I just want to make sure that we're proper with what we're saying and essentially reporting on this topic. I do think that there is definitely a process to play out here. And I had one source tell me that the Argos are casting a wide net. And I think we've seen that in the names that have been reported so far. But I would imagine that there's a bunch of names that, you know, we haven't heard about. So to me, there is still a while to go here before the Argos potentially get to a head coach. It would surprise me if there was, I usually don't say this stuff, so I don't even know why I'm saying it, but a head coach announcement by the Argos this week, because I think they want to go through this process. And, you know, as much as some people might make fun of the Argos, and, you know, rightfully so in the situation with letting Ryan Dinwiddie go to Ottawa, just a terrible decision. But anyways, the Montreal Alouettes didn't have an owner or a settled in, you know, GM and coach for a while there, and were able to win a Grey Cup in 2023. So I think that this process will be played out, but it hasn't gone the way that the Argos wanted. The Argos wanted Mike O'Shea. Like, let's call a spade. And there were people around the league, guys, while we were at Grey Cup, that were absolutely shocked that Mike O'Shea didn't go there. A lot of people were talking about it as if it was a done deal. So if you're another coach thinking about going there, you have to wonder, okay, what did Mike O'Shea view in the setup or the situation that didn't work for him? And why did he not go there with all of his connections, Mike Pinball Clemens top among them, and the fact that he played for that team? Why did he not go there? You have to ask yourself that situation. And I think that's why the Argonauts are not necessarily going to draw the top, top candidates for the position.
Just to be entirely clear and accurate in terms of the parallel that you just drew there to the Montreal Alouettes dunk, which I think is a fair one. They didn't have an owner and they didn't have a quarterback. They did have Jason Moss hired going into that offseason in December. So about the same.
Danny Machocha, I think, too.
And Machocha was already in there as the general manager. So they did have those pieces in place, but I think you can draw some parallels in terms of the uncertainty that an organization is dealing with.
Well, hey, let's draw this comparison. The Toronto Argonauts didn't have a coach until like February in 2017, and they won the Grey Cup that year, right? Like the whole Mark Trestman debacle. We remember this, right? Now they ended up canning him like a year later. But still, for 1 year, that arrangement worked out great. And this was a situation I remember where going into free agency, it's like, how are you recruiting free agents if you don't have a head coach? Like, what is going on with the Argonauts? So there's even a recent precedent for not having a coach for like weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks and weeks beyond when you probably should, and winning a Grey Cup. So the Alouettes, I think, holds here as an analogy, but the Argonauts have their own analogy that arguably fits even better.
Let's see what happens. Stay tuned to 3donation.com for the latest. We have published our top 50 pending free agent list. And when I say we, mostly that would be John Hodge because he's an absolute monster. With rankings, plus all 50 of those players have at least a paragraph write-up. Unbelievable stuff, my man. But Levi Mitchell, Brady Oliveira, Jalen Hutchings, Keon Hatcher, and Trevor Harris make up the top five. How did this list come together, and are there any changes that should be made?
Well, I mean, I'll say this. It's a top 50 ranking, and there's another 25 odd players at the bottom of the ranking that are like guys who just missed the cut. So I'm open to the argument that anybody should be moved to some extent, right? Like, you laid out the top five. There are some great players outside the top five. One could argue that Jamarcus Hardrick should be in the top five. One could argue that Tyson Philpott should be in the top five. Sam Emily should be in the top five, etc. So I'm totally willing to hear arguments that guys should be moved, you know, up or down a couple of spots. You know, I in fact, while making this list, with feedback from both of you as well as some of our other contributors at 3 Down Nation, I was doing that, right, as I'm making the list. Oh, no, this guy feels low. Oh, this guy feels high. Okay, I thought this guy was too low, but I can't move him past this person, you know? So I put the criteria in the article, different considerations that I had or that we had while doing this. It was age, position, nationality, health, production, and potential. So there's some guys, like I didn't end up getting Clark Barnes on the list, but he's a guy who I think if he was healthy could be a 1,000-yard Canadian receiver in this league. You know, for him, potential is a bump. For some guys, nationality is a bump, right? Obviously, Sam Emelis didn't lead the league in receiving, but he has been an absolute monster for the Saskatchewan Rough Riders for many years now. 1,000 yards in 2023, 1,000 yards in 2024, and he was on pace for over 1,500 yards this year, just on the games that he played. So he's a guy who gets a bit of a bump because he's Canadian. A guy like Wynton McManus, who didn't crack the top 10, that's injury related. Jake Ceresna fell down, that's injury related, right? So these are all different things you try to balance. So again, I'm open to the idea that any of these guys should be moved a little bit. I totally get that, but I'm really pleased with how it came out. I think that Bo Levi Mitchell as the number one free agent makes a lot of sense. He hasn't even committed to playing in 2026, but he told me at Grey Cup that his body feels great, and he seemed to be pretty peeved that he didn't win MOP over Nathan Rourke. He had to go all the way out to Vancouver in 2024 for that awards ceremony just to lose to Brady Oliveira. He had to come out all the way to Winnipeg in the cold in November just to lose, right, to Nathan Rourke.
Wasn't that cold?
Well, cold is relative. Let's remember Bo now lives in, I believe, it's South Carolina. So Winnipeg in November, even at +2, I think is probably cold by his standard. But regardless, to me, I think he is the number one because whether it's the Edmonton Elks, whether it's even the Ottawa Redblacks, depending on what happens with Drew Brown, whether it's, you know, the Tiger Cats themselves, obviously. I mean, heck, we'll wait and see. Maybe a new coach in Toronto wants to shake things up at the quarterback position, right? There are a number of teams, or heck, if Trevor Harris retires, which I don't think he will, but if he does, the Saskatchewan Rough Riders should be making a play for Bo Levi Mitchell. I mean, this guy's playing at a MOP level, 36 touchdowns, 11 picks, arguably playing the best ball of his career at the age of 35, turns 36 in March. And again, Bo has said he doesn't want to play till he's 40, but to me, he looks right now like he could play another 2, 3, 4, 5 years. Who knows? So that was the list. I'm proud of how it turned out. But again, are there guys who you could argue should be moved up or down a spot or two? Absolutely. Of course. I don't think there's anybody you can really argue should be moved 20 spots, 30 spots. But I'm curious if you guys disagree.
I think you're pretty spot on with this list, Hodge. There's a couple guys that are in the bottom half of the list that I think are maybe a little bit underrated. Destin Talbert has been fantastic as a young halfback with the Hamilton Tiger Cats. I might bump him up a little bit. I think Isaiah Wooden, it's tough to rank a true specialist returner in a list like this when guys are putting in starting minutes, but he's somebody that I might bump up. And Isaac D'Arcangelo, the more I think about him and his potential as a player, the more I'd like to see him raised up in the list. But overall, a really, really solid effort and well-researched effort on this. If I could make one change, however, it would be to put both Jamarcus Hardrick and Jarrell Broxton in the top five. And I would probably take out Brady Oliveira and Keon Hatcher out of that top five to do it, with all due respect to both of those players. But it is incredibly difficult to find elite tackles at any level of football right now. NFL, CFL, heck, go down to college. It's incredibly difficult to find those guys. Hardrick's a little bit older, 35 going on 36. Jarrell Broxton's 32, but neither of them are ancient. To me, you pay through the nose to get a premier stalwart tackle like that. Both of those guys fall into that category. I just don't think there's anyone else close to their caliber who's either available or unavailable in the league right now. Those are distinctly the top two guys. That's why I would have them up in my top five, because I just don't think you can find them anywhere else.
To me, it's all about the quarterbacks, boys. And as much as we think that Bo Levi Mitchell is going to go back to Hamilton and Trevor Harris will continue playing with Saskatchewan, those two guys on a pending CFL free agent list would be 1-2. And the reason that Bo Levi Mitchell would be number one is because he's younger than Trevor Harris. So the way that I look at this essentially is because the majority of the contracts in the CFL can be distilled down to one-year deals. So I'm looking at this from a one-year perspective. And that's why I think that those two would be top two, at least on my personal list. And we had a good little debate about that among the three of us. And I think, honestly, Cody Fajardo should be higher for that exact reason. At least in my mind, and some people in Ottawa might not want to hear it, I would be making a play for Cody Fajardo if I was them over Drew Brown. He's shown a lot of growth and heart and grit, I would say, over his years, especially after he's left the Saskatchewan Roughriders and went on to Montreal and then, you know, had to go through that situation where they chose Davis Alexander, went on to Edmonton, and rallied that team after they got off to a rough start. I think Cody Fajardo would be an upgrade in Ottawa, to be quite honest, a quarterback. I'm happy to be proven wrong. We'll see what happens in 2026, but that's why I would bump the quarterbacks up. I think they can make the most impact. But that said, it's hard to see Bo Levi Mitchell playing in 2026 without Scott Milanovic. He's thrown for over 5,000 yards in two straight seasons since Milanovic has taken over fully as head coach and calling the plays for those entire seasons. So that just makes so much sense for Mitchell to go back there. And very same in Saskatchewan. Trevor Harris said, as a matter of fact, that he does not want to take another snap in the Canadian Football League other than with Mark Mueller in his headset. So you would imagine that those two deals are likely, and the key word I think is likely, because you never know what can happen in the crazy Canadian Football League, to get done. But I think on Mitchell's side and Harris's side, you can understand that they want to maximize their value to an extent, to understand that, hey, I got a championship caliber team around me in Hamilton with Bo Levi Mitchell. I want these guys to be back with me. Same with Trevor Harris in Saskatchewan. He's already talking about let's run it back. And then there's some people in the league that will say, with regards, in all due respect, to Bo Levi Mitchell and Trevor Harris, where else are you going to go earn, let's say, $500,000, you know, right after your playing career? So as long as their bodies feel great and they're fully committed, in the case of Trevor Harris, that's what he's really talked about a lot, then I think it's likely that those two quarterbacks come back. If not, that would open up a whole different discussion that we'll obviously get into if Bo Levi Mitchell and Trevor Harris were to retire. I don't think we've considered that aspect of it because it does seem like they are going to play. But honestly, Hodge, this list is just so well done. So I'm not going to pick holes in it, especially because I'm terrible at rankings. It would literally have taken me probably 2 weeks to put this together. And that's just the rankings part of it. Probably would have taken me a whole other day to put all the little paragraphs there that you put together. So that's all I'm going to say. I just think the quarterbacks, you know, could have been higher in a couple of spots. But overall, I think it's a really sharp list. And it shows a lot of the star talent that could potentially be available during free agency.
I don't think it's that you're bad at ranking. I think it's that you're bad at ranking football stuff. Like, if we had you rank food, you could be like, one, hummus, two, cucumbers, three, the rest of all food, all other foods. Done. Ranking's done, right? So it's just a matter of what you're ranking, I think, is the issue. But I appreciate what you said. I will say I like, JC, that you highlighted Isaac Darkangelo, a guy who's never been a full-time starter but is a beast on teams, can play a bunch of different spots rotationally. Another guy like that is Caleb Saunders in Saskatchewan, a guy who's not a starter on that very good Riders defensive line, but I think is a lot more impactful when he's out there than some regular starters in other teams. So again, these are some of the challenges with ranking guys. The other thing I'll say, and this ties in a little bit of what you said, Justin, about Trevor Harris, is I get feedback from people who are like, well, why would you even put this guy on the list? He's never leaving Edmonton, or he's never leaving Toronto, or he's never. And look, it's entirely possible that a bunch of these guys I've ranked are going back to their teams. But right now they're pending free agents, so they count. Because I don't want to not rank a guy and then have egg on my face. For instance, the 2023 Grey Cup, I asked Jamarcus Hardrick straight up, like, would you play anywhere other than Winnipeg at this point of your career? And he said, wherever Mike O'Shea is where I'm going to be playing. And then literally 2 months later, 3 months later, he was gone. And to be 100% clear, I'm not discrediting Jamarcus for that decision. It turned out to be a great decision. He got his family a ton of money, and he got an O-lineman award this year, all CFL selection, and a Grey Cup. So, like, that was a great choice. But the point is, what players say in the media, and especially with all the emotions of, like, a end of season or, like, a playoff run on the line, their thought process can change, especially with the clarity of a few months off and their agent in their year saying, hey, we can go to this team and get this much money, or hey, there's these other three teams that want you. Like, I'll give an example. I obviously can't speak for Cody Fajardo, nor would I try to, but there are rumors in the rumor mill that he might not be as keen to go back to Edmonton as he let on at the end of the year. Again, I'm not speaking for Cody Fajardo. That's just the rumor mill. But when he said to the press a month or and maybe a half ago, oh, if I'm back, it's with Edmonton, I'm not sure that's true. So I think Justin's point about Ottawa is very astute, right? It's possible there are going to be quarterback holes across the league with some of these retirements. And so I think right now we have to act like all these guys are in play. Mm-hmm. Even somebody like Brady Oliveira, who's making great money in Winnipeg, fits that team perfectly, is from the city, all of those things. Is there a chance he could leave in free agency? I think the answer is yes. I don't think it's a huge chance, but I think anybody who says there's a 100% chance Brady Oliveira is back is a fool. This is the CFL. Nothing is ever a 100% chance, especially when money and emotions and power dynamics and family situations, right, and all of these things culminate in what are ultimately really tough decisions sometimes for these players who, by the way, deserve the right to make their own decisions. So that's my thought process on it.
Brady Oliveira seemed to make it very clear that he understands the shelf life of a running back perhaps
absolutely
isn't that long in some of the other positions, and that money's going to play a factor because he already took a hometown discount, not for one season, for two seasons, to go back to Winnipeg and try to win a home Grey Cup. I think that was, you know, great move for the Winnipeg Blue Bombers to be able to get him back there. But Brady Oliveira is well within his right to go maximize his value. And we saw the last time around that he had $275,000 sitting on the table and went back to Winnipeg for about $30,000 to $40,000 less. I think he signed for $230,000 in the first year and $240,000 in the second year. So he's taking $45,000 less in year one and $35,000. My math is so far off, bro.
Regardless.
Am I right?
Brady has left a significant amount of money on the table. I think that's, we could just say that as a statement. That is an accurate statement.
Better. What's 275 minus 230?
That would be 45.
Okay, so he left 45 on the table 1 year, and then he made 240. Presumably, if he would have got that 275, that would be how much? 35?
35.
Correct.
So what's
45? We're talking about $80,000.
Yes, thank you.
Yeah. Regardless, that's a lot of money. JC, I'll move on to the next topic, but now before you get in what you were wanting to say.
Well, I was just going to back up your point that literally anything can happen. And it's notable that people were saying that about Trevor Harris, that he would never leave the Riders. And because we have the comparable, and we literally talked about it earlier in the show, the 2023 Montreal Alouettes. He wanted to be back in Montreal that season. Montreal wanted him back in Montreal that season. But because of factors outside of both of their control, he ends up in Saskatchewan, right, because of that ownership situation. So we don't know what the world is going to look like in 2 weeks, in a month, in 2 months, when these deals have to be signed. Anything can happen, and we need to be aware of all the different factors at play that can send guys in different directions.
Yeah, and I'll paint a hypothetical, total hypothetical. We know that Edmonton and Trey Ford are headed for a divorce. I think 99% chance that happens. But if Cody Fajardo decides he doesn't want to go back to Edmonton, if you're at Hervey, you just spent the sun and the moon and the stars on O-line and D-lines that did not produce to that level in 2025. What's to stop you from freeing up a bunch of that cap and then saying, yeah, Trevor, we're prepared to give you $800,000. Like, we're going to make you the highest paid player in the CFL because we need to win now. We need a quarterback.
$800,000?
I'm just throwing it out there. Like Nathan Rourke is in around.
Go up.
Well, that's why Trevor was saying that Nathan's not the face of the league yet, because he's expecting that $800,000 check.
But you could put, let's say, $700,000 of that on the cap, $100,000 off the cap. I mean, again, it's a hypothetical, but the Edmonton Elks need to win now. They need a quarterback. If Cody Fajardo's not that guy, and I think it's established Trey Ford's not that guy, then you go out and you get the top available guy. Maybe it's Bo Levi Mitchell. Maybe it's Trevor Harris when push comes to shove. Again, remains to be seen. But like, if Trevor Harris is offered $800K hypothetically at Edmonton, would he go back to Sask for $500? I think it's fine if he wants to, but I also wouldn't fault the guy if he's just like, no, I still got some old Edmonton gear in my closet. Let's go. I'll put it on. Let's go.
That's a valid take. I just don't want Riders fans to get all worried, because if you're Trevor Harris, you're looking at the situation in Saskatchewan from a bunch of different angles. It's not necessarily just the money that you're going to get to play, presumably, if he does in 2026. It's the long-term upside and the legacy. You look at the way that Darian Durant is treated in that province, and you talk to his former teammates, and they'll tell you that, you know, he's very quiet. He doesn't necessarily like the attention. And I experienced that firsthand, fellas. I will never forget when Darian Durant went to Montreal. I think I was involved in the first, if not one of the first scrums that Darian Durant was in, and he was sweating profusely. He had a towel with him, I believe, because he knew he was going to be sweating, and he had to wipe the sweat away multiple times. That's how uncomfortable he is. So you look at a guy like Trevor Harris, who's very comfortable in the media, very well-spoken, and has obviously captured the hearts of Rider Nation. And you got to think, okay, let's say the Riders put a decent offer on the table, $500,000. Okay. Is it below market value? I think you could argue perhaps it would be for Trevor Harris and what he's done for that team and winning Grey Cup MVP. But the long-term money-making ability and the legacy of going back to Saskatchewan and perhaps going back-to-back, I'm not saying it's going to happen. But if you are the first quarterback in Saskatchewan Roughriders franchise history to go back-to-back, that is worth way more than even a couple $100,000 or a few $100,000 more from Edmonton. So that's a great point that you laid out, Hodge. I think the Elks should be ready if a scenario like that played out. But if you're Trevor Harris making that decision, it's much different than looking at some of the other franchises around the league from the longevity standpoint. So I'm not just saying that because I've, you know, covered the Riders closely for the last two seasons with 620 CKRM. It's just something that came to me as this discussion was happening, and I think that Trevor Harris will take into consideration.
I reported a list of 16 CFL players who could potentially receive NFL opportunities this offseason. I also had some names just off the list as well. Three of those guys, Damian Alford, Trey Vavil, and Isaiah Wooden, have already worked out for the New York Jets. Alford and Wooden, as of this recording, have also worked out for the Saints, though we expect many of the guys on the list will get more workouts on the horizon. For instance, I can report that Jalen Hutchings, all CFL defensive lineman, already has two NFL workouts lined up, date still to be determined. JC, who stood out the most to you on this list?
Well, Jalen Hutchings always stands out to most of me on any list because he was absolutely dominant this season. And I do expect that he will be one of the guys who ends up signing an NFL contract. By about six games into this season, you could tell he was about as good as gone. But there are some other guys who I am glad you included on the list and who are very intriguing to me. J.J. Ross, the cornerback from the Edmonton Elks, to me is a really interesting one because he was exceptional when he was on the field this season, a real breakout star for Edmonton. But he also has something that NFL teams covet, and that's size, right? He's 6'3", 195 pounds. With his production and his length, you'd have to imagine that there's going to be opportunities for him south of the border. And then a name that maybe isn't so much on people's immediate radar, but I think has a sneaky good chance to sign a contract, is Peyton Collins, the tackle from the Saskatchewan Roughriders, who had a tremendous rookie season, was limited to just 12 regular season games at left tackle due to some injuries, but he was exceptionally highly graded this season in the CFL. He was exceptionally highly graded at Eastern Kentucky, which is an FCS program in college, a smaller school, but slipped through the NFL cracks. You think about how valuable that position is, how much NFL teams are looking for talent there. I think it's hard to look past somebody like Peyton Collins, who has multiple touch points of success. And we saw Trevor Reed sign south of the border last offseason. I think Collins could follow a similar path.
I'd focus on Damian Alford, because when you talk to NFL people, they always talk about, well, what are their winning traits or where are they really going to stand out? And with Damian Alford, it's obvious. He just needed to produce and prove that he could play at the professional level. 6'6", 224 pounds, and ran a 4.46 second 40-yard dash. I look no further than Ajoa Joe last year. He was 6'3", 218 pounds, but nowhere near, with all due respect, as fast as Damian Alford. NFL teams would have liked to have seen Alford be healthy for the entire season. I think he could potentially be a 1,000-yard guy, but that's why I zone in on a guy like that. I think JC's bang on with Peyton Collins and even Jalen Hutchings as well, as Hodge laid out. But I think Damian Alford has a real chance to get in a training camp down there just based on the sheer size, because the NFL scouts are going to say, big physical receiver who's fast as well. He can win in multiple ways. He's still young and moldable. That's the one that jumps off the list to me.
And I talked to over a dozen sources for this list. A lot of people who work in personnel in the CFL provide lists to NFL contacts directly or indirectly of guys who they think should get a chance. And just for some clarity, the general criteria for these lists are the cutoffs like age 27 typically. Every now and again, you see a guy get an NFL look a little bit older than that, like Matthew Betts got one. I think Andy Fantuz was a little over that threshold when he got an NFL look. Mike Riley once got an NFL workout, I think at age 33, which is kind of crazy. But generally speaking, age 27 is about the hard cutoff. If you're older than that, the NFL won't look at you. The other things is you want to look for guys who don't have a ton of NFL cuts already under their belt. If you're a guy who wins a training camp with the Falcons in 22 and the 49ers in 23, and then 2024, you're at the Raiders, Vikings, and Ravens. And then in you know 2025, you had a cup of coffee with the Chargers, and now you come to the CFL. Well, every NFL team has seen this person in preseason games. They've all got grades on this guy. They've seen him. Whereas a guy like Peyton Collins, who you laid out, JC, never been under contract in the NFL. Jalen Hutchings, never been under contract in the NFL. And if you read the full list, there's other guys I've noted. Came straight to the CFL from college. They now have pro-level film. A lot of those guys, by the way, smaller school guys. One of them is Dante Myers. Played at Delta State, D2, 25 years old, speedster. Perfect example of a guy who I think is deserving of his first NFL look. This is a person who NFL teams aren't looking at as, oh, right, that guy I've seen 17 times. They're looking at him going, oh, we've never seen him against top competition. That could be interesting for us. And the other thing is, for lack of a better term, a freak factor, right? The 6'6", frame of Damian Alford, the 6'3" frame of J.J. Ross. These are the types of things that an NFL team can't just go, oh, there will be a guy in the draft like that, right? Or there's a guy on the street like that. Those are the factors that NFL teams look for. So if you're a CFL fan wanting to prognosticate in future years, who could go to the NFL? Those are the traits to look for. Like, I saw an article the other day. It was maybe the worst thing I've ever read. Very clearly AI generated. And one of the players, I think the first guy on the list was Jamarcus Hardrick. It's like, oh, he could get looks from NFL teams. And it's like, this is a 35-year-old man. Like, Jamarcus, great guy, love him to death, awesome player, never going to the NFL. He's 35.
He should get looks, though. He's better than a bunch of tackles in the NFL.
That's true. And he's also never going to get signed by the NFL. And he's also someone who I think back in like 2012 was with the Carolina Panthers. Like, the NFL saw him 14 years ago at this point, right? So the reason I mentioned that is a bunch of the guys on that list were old, relatively speaking. So anyway, those are the criteria. That's what I use for the list. Please check it out. And obviously stay tuned to 3downnation.com as we'll report all of these workouts over the next, you know, 6 weeks or so. These workouts go into the new year. Signings start shortly after January 1st. So we'll have all the latest.
The freak factor thing is interesting because it's all relative. And I think a guy I'll be fascinated to see how the NFL judges him is Robert Carter Jr. Because I think from the plays he made, undeniably freak factor, right? This guy jumps tall buildings in a single bound, makes acrobatic catches, can return kicks. He can do it all. Was extremely successful as a rookie with the BC Lions. Had a great college pedigree at the FCS level as well. But the question for him is size. He's under 5'9", 175 pounds soaking wet. Typically, those are disqualifiers for the NFL. Are they going to see how he performed physically and athletically in the CFL and say, we can make an exception for this guy because he falls into that freak category? Or are they going to look at his build and his size and dismiss him for a second time? I think there's a possibility it could go either way with him. So I'll be watching him closely as sort of that break-even guy on that freak factor.
The other part of this discussion, fellas, and CFL people will tell you this as well, and we've seen it over the years, there are going to be some players who get NFL workouts and potentially sign contracts that people will go like, what?
Yeah.
How does the NFL view that guy as a player that deserves a contract over all these other guys who have, you know, at least dominated for stints or periods or years in the Canadian Football League? So, Hodge, I think it's a great list. It's not a shot at your list. It's just seemingly what has happened over the years. You know, I'm trying to think of, I think most recently there was a random Ottawa Redblacks defensive back that was in the NFL for, I think it was like a couple of seasons. I can't think of the name right now.
Oh, I know exactly what you're talking about. I'll remember in a second. He was with the Bears. But
came out of nowhere.
I will say there was some Coleman. I'm thinking Coleman. Douglas Coleman?
Yeah.
Is that right?
No, that's the Sam linebacker from last year or 2 years ago, right?
I think that's one of the guys I was thinking of.
Yeah,
I think so. But regardless, I have, in doing this list, I did it this year. I think in years past, I've tried to do it and haven't ended up finishing it. But there was one individual I reached out to in the CFL who essentially replied with, who the F knows? The NFL doesn't even work out our best players. So how am I supposed to guess?
Exactly.
It was like, okay, fair enough. I don't think I asked that person this year. I didn't think they were being rude. I appreciated their honesty. But yeah, that is how some people in the league view these workouts, at least. They're like, that guy is, yeah, he's the sixth best receiver on his team. Why is he the one? But whatever.
Hey, this is Steve Gorman, radio host, sports commentator, former drummer for the Black Crowes. The winter holidays are here, a time for festive celebrations, family gatherings, and ringing in the new year. Whether it's a holiday party, a night out with friends, or just relaxing by the fire with a few drinks, it's a season full of good cheer. But here's something else to add to your holiday plans, a safe and sober ride home. Just like in sports and music, always have a game plan. And the most important part of any plan is sticking to it. If you plan to drink, take that plan a step further. Call a rideshare, a taxi, a sober friend, or have a designated driver lined up before the night begins. Drinking and driving is a decision that can change your life and the lives of others forever. A DUI, a crash, an injury, the consequences are real and lasting. So please, for your sake and for everyone else on the road, make the smart choice. Get a sober ride home. Drive sober or get pulled over. Paid for by NHTSA.
Running connects us. The early mornings, the personal bests, the shared finish lines. At Marathon Sports, we're proud to be part of that journey with you. Our team helps you find shoes that fit your stride, apparel that feels good, and gear that keeps you moving. Stop by one of 28 New England locations or shop online at marathonsports.com. Marathon Sports, inspiring movement in everyone.
Before we get to the Blue Bombers, I just thought it's worth bringing up. There's a lot of people, especially in Winnipeg College, asking about Taylor Elgersma. And you wrote a great article on him after talking to general manager Kyle Walters. And Elgersma is hoping to sign an NFL contract and decided to go that route because he didn't want to have to sign a futures contract and then wait to potentially get with that team. So oftentimes what happens in the National Football League is teams who are out of the playoff mix will bring players in for a look. Perhaps it's a workout, maybe more, stint on the practice roster to see, okay, does this guy have it? And do we want to keep him around in the off season for those programs, organized training activities? So that's why Taylor Elgersma didn't want to sign a CFL contract, is because it was essentially have ruled him out of that process. And that's something that even happens in the Canadian Football League. We see it when the practice rosters expand after Labor Day, that teams do that up here. So that's what Elgersma is hoping to do. I feel like it was worth addressing before we go on to talk about Winnipeg and the offensive coordinator. But Haas, is there anything you want to add on Elgersma?
No, other than to say, I think maybe there's been some concern in Winnipeg from fans going, oh, he doesn't want to sign here. He doesn't want to sign here. And that is 100% not true. The Bombers are optimistic that Elgersma will sign. And I had a conversation with Elgersma's agent, Fred Weinreich, who indicated that Taylor would be more than happy to sign in Winnipeg if and when his NFL opportunities have officially dried up. So there is no reason for Bomber fans or CFL fans to panic. If Taylor doesn't go to the NFL, he's going to come to the CFL. And obviously he'll have to prove himself and show that he can compete and all those things. But this is not a situation where Taylor is NFL or retirement to do other stuff. He is fully aboard the CFL train if and when the NFL train has left the station, for lack of a better metaphor.
It's smart business, because if Taylor Elgersma would have signed with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, realistically, he wasn't going to get on the field. And then once you signal to NFL teams that you yourself believe you're a CFL player, and that's not a shot at the CFL, that's just how these NFL teams view it, then you're telling them, okay, well, you know, potentially cross him off the list. So there are multiple factors as to why Taylor Elgersma has not signed with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, and Hodge laid it out well. It's not because he doesn't respect the CFL. I still think he could be a great talent in either league. We saw that in the preseason with the Green Bay Packers. You know, that's a move right there that just befuddled a lot of people. He outplayed Sean Clifford in that battle for the third string quarterback job there in Green Bay. And then the Packers and Matt LaFleur were like, no, we're going to cut you both and bring in Clayton Toon, who hasn't even been in the offense for the whole offseason and training camp. So sometimes these NFL moves don't even make sense to pro personnel men and scouts and coaches in the CFL. Let's get to Winnipeg, where it appears Mike O'Shea could be making a change at offensive coordinator following Jason Hogan's first year as the play caller. What's going on with position, and what do you think of the team signing former Super Bowl winner and UFL MVP Bryce Perkins? Is that part of that secret three-year quarterback plan that O'Shea alluded to?
That was the funny part of the press conference with Osh. We'll start with Perkins first. I mean, look, lots of quarterbacks have come to the CFL with NFL pedigree, college pedigree, and I guess in recent instances, UFL slash XFL slash UFL or USFL slash AAF.
AAF.
Am I missing any other ones?
USFL.
Yeah, all slash pedigree, right? And some of those guys have been unbelievably bad, right?
Well, the IFL too, the Indoor Football League.
Yeah, you could throw the IFL in there, sure. Why not? That be, you know, maybe the most recent example would be a guy like PJ Walker, who didn't necessarily have great stats in the NFL, but had a number of starts. He obviously struggled in his first full year with the Calgary Stampeders and then ultimately got hurt, which is unfortunate.
Think about that for a second, though. Just with regard to our last conversation, PJ Walker started games in the National Football League.
Like a lot.
He came to the CFL and struggled.
Yeah, yeah, 100%, right? And so I don't want to crown Bryce Perkins, and I think it would be foolish to suggest that he's going to be great or anything like that. That would be putting the cart way before the horse. But he does have some very intriguing elements to his game, right? He's 6'2", 215 pounds, nice size. He's a little bit on the older side. He'll turn 29 this offseason, but that's still young enough that he could be effective for many, many years if he comes up and competes and does all the right things and learns. And he spent 3 years with the LA Rams. I think learning from guys like Sean McVay and Matt Stafford is a good thing to do. He only started one game there, but again, he got a Super Bowl ring, theoretically learned a ton, and he recently played well in the UFL. And I think the thing that maybe stands out most and might help him get on the field early in Winnipeg is his legs, right? Chris Streveler, by all accounts, is done in Winnipeg. He tore his ACL for the second straight year. And unlike last year where he tore it early fall, he tore it very late in the season this year, which to me is, it means that, you know, could he play in 2026? Yes. But I don't think any CFL team is going to sign him. He's a pending free agent until he's healthy, in which case we're probably talking about September, October, like late in the year. And when I spoke with Streveler after the season, he said he's not even thinking about whether or not he'll be back. He's got other stuff to think about. So he's not even necessarily 100% committed to playing in 2026. I think when you look at the size, the athleticism, he ran a 4.65 coming out of school at the University of Virginia, where he was a two-year standout. Perkins is a guy who could fit that role nicely. So I'm intrigued to see what he could do there. As for the OC job, I mean, on the record, it was very clear that Zach Collaros was not thrilled with the way the offense worked this year. He said they did not play good football. He said that this offense rep things in training camp that were never called during the season. Brady Oliveira, who loved Jason Hogan over a three-year stint as the team's running backs coach, didn't necessarily offer as pointed a criticism, but he also made it clear he was not super happy with the offense this year. And in speaking to sources, I've been led to believe this team would rep things all 3 days of practice and potentially not even call them in a game. That's not unusual for like a few plays. You can never call literally everything that you've practiced, but there was a weirdly high percentage of stuff that would get practiced and then wouldn't get called into a game, which again, it feels like the type of amateur mistake that even a rookie OC shouldn't necessarily be making. And I think if Jason Hogan as a rookie had been really receptive to the tutelage of guys who were more veteran on that staff, guys like Andre Bolduc, who's been around the block a ton in the CFL, guys like Jarius Jackson, who have played, coached all those things, maybe things would have gone better. But I'm not sure how receptive Jason Hogan was to that type of feedback. So my spidey senses were tingling when Mike O'Shea's season-ending press conference, I pushed about the status of his coaching staff, of his assistants, and in two different press conferences, one before his extension, one after, he basically declined to answer anything about his assistants, saying he had to have conversations first. To me, if your staff is back, you can just say, yeah, we're back. And if you have to make changes,
hold up.
Go ahead.
Credit you for pushing back on him, but I believe Michael Shea's answer was he needed to check his whiteboard for the contract statuses of his
the first time I asked him, he claimed he couldn't remember how long people were under contract for. Once he signed his extension, the answer changed to, I'm not talking about that because I have to have conversations first. Which was like, okay, at least now you're being honest, because I'm sure he didn't actually forget the first time. If he doesn't know how long his assistants are under contract for, Mike O'Shea is a grossly negligent head coach. And I don't think he is that. I think he's a great head coach. Regardless, I think that was kind of the first sense that, oh, if he has to go have a bunch of conversations, that might be an indication of change is happening. Well, he's since reportedly requested and received permission to interview Tommy Condell, who has been the offensive coordinator in Ottawa the last 2 years, has a close relationship with Zach Kolaris. They had a ton of success together with the Ticats a decade ago. And also Mike Miller, the quarterback's coach of the Toronto Argonauts, who, if hired as the new OC in Winnipeg, would provide a very comical situation, as Winnipeg would have two of its three coordinators literally named Mike Miller. I don't know how they'll manage that. That sounds...
Hodge. Even the podcast listeners know that. You want it to happen.
I kind of do want it to happen. I was just thinking now from an HR standpoint, like, who gets M. Miller at BlueBombers.com? How do you figure that out? What about the pay stubs? What about the tax implications? What about the T4s, gentlemen? Has somebody thought of the CPAs?
Didn't you do the deep research to find out their middle names?
No, I've not done that. But that will be a talking point if, in fact, Mike Miller, we'll say quarterback Mike Miller, is hired to join special teams Mike Miller in Winnipeg. But we're getting ahead of ourselves. Regardless,
if all your coordinators have the same name, can you just pretend they're one person under the football ops cap?
Michael Shea would like to do that.
I've heard of dumber ideas. I really have. And maybe there's a defensive coordinator out there named Mike Miller. I don't know. I think Jordan Younger is very good. But or maybe he's open to legally changing his name. Who's to say? Regardless, I do expect there to be a change at this point in Winnipeg. I think some level of change is very fair to speculate. I just don't know exact what level of change on the offensive side of the ball. I would be surprised if there was change elsewhere. But that offensive coaching staff was not up to snuff in 2025. And I think when your franchise quarterback, who they just stamped down, like I asked Kyle Walters, are you renegotiating with Zach Kolaris? He said, no, Zach's our guy and he's earned his money. Okay, well, if Zach has a say, I think we all know there's going to be change in that coaching staff.
I won't spend too much time on Bryce Perkins because, A, you laid it out very nicely there, Hodge, but also, B, I talked about him a few weeks ago in JC's random neg lister. Has signed in the CFL, so go back a few weeks. You could listen to that pod, get all my takes on Bryce Perkins, but I'm a Nostradamus. I'm picking guys out who are signing left and right now. I've got about a 10% hit rate at this stage, but we're ticking. The numbers are ticking up. The numbers are ticking up. In terms of the offensive coordinator position, it's clear that a change needs to happen, both in terms of the on-field production, but also keeping that locker room together, right? The level of resentment that you feel coming out of the Bombers, some of the comments, those are not good things to allow to grow within a football team. Those are the things that can erode a dynasty, erode a franchise, and lead to a complete collapse. Mike O'Shea, quite frankly, should have acted sooner with making a change midseason, in my opinion. I know he's more conservative on those things. He needs to make that change now. Mike Miller is an interesting candidate to me if you can steal him away from Toronto. I mentioned him in that head coaching conversation. He has not called plays in the CFL since 2013 when he had a co-offensive coordinator title, I believe, with the Montreal Alouettes. They had some coaching changes there during that season, but he's called plays in the NFL before. He's been around the game now, or the Canadian game, for a little bit longer. I think it's worth giving him a shot, but I also think Jarius Jackson in-house is a really interesting option. He's had some bad CFL offenses, but he's had some good CFL offenses as well, and when he left Edmonton, we forget that that Elks team down the stretch in 2024 was really successful offensively, and they were specifically successful offensively because of what they did on the ground with the running game. Well, Winnipeg loves to run the ball. You've got Brady Oliveira, theoretically, if you can get him re-signed. Well, give him somebody who's going to commit to running the football. Get Jarius Jackson to say, hey, we'll do all the things we did that season in Edmonton with you, make you the workhorse for this team again as Zach goes into the later stages of his career. I think J-Jack would be a really intriguing hire there as the OC.
You mentioned Jarius Jackson's name, and I think we should have talked about him in our segment with regard to the Toronto Argonauts head coach job. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of parallels there. He used to be a Toronto Argonaut as a player, and I think he could actually be a great hire for that position, considering he knows, for example, Jason Shivers, who's already under contract for 2026 as, you know, suppose it's a co-defensive coordinator and his personnel role. So I think that would be smart if you're Toronto. I think definitely Winnipeg should talk to Jarius Jackson about potentially being the offensive coordinator there, depending what other options he has. And, you know, Michael Shea has caught a lot of flack for hiring Jason Hogan as the offensive coordinator, and rightfully so. But let's balance this out a little bit, because he did actually speak to other candidates and tried, from what I'm told, you know, pretty mightily to convince some people. I'm not going to name any names, but convince some people to come to Winnipeg as the offensive coordinator. So as much as Michael Shea is a proud Canadian and likes to give Canadians opportunities, that isn't necessarily the deciding factor for him. And I think it's best said that Jason Hogan, you know, probably wasn't his first choice. That's not a disrespect to Jason Hogan. And I don't think Michael Shea is just going to give the job to somebody if he doesn't believe that they can do it. But Michael Shea was looking into other names last offseason. That's why it took so long for him to finally hire an offensive coordinator here. So I think what we're seeing come to fruition, you know, based on the reporting and what we believe we know so far, is that Michael Shea is undergoing a process here and wants to find an offensive coordinator that's going to work best for his coaching staff, and I believe most importantly, Zach Collaros, his franchise quarterback.
Let's move to the U Sports ranks, fellas. The Montreal Carabins beat the Saskatchewan Huskies 30-16 in the 60th Vanier Cup at Mosaic Stadium. There was some controversy late in the second quarter. JC, why don't you take us through it?
Well, let's call a spade and just say that this was as bad a missed call as I have ever seen watching football at any level. It was inside of 3 minutes. The Montreal Carabins were leading by a single point with the ball and were marching down the field. Pepe Gonzalez, their fabulous first-year quarterback who won the game's MVP, escaped the pocket, rolled out, and found, I believe it was Simon LaRose, for a 19-yard gain to move the sticks on 2nd and 7. But it was clear as day that he was not just slightly ahead of the line of scrimmage, but 3 or 4 yards past the line of scrimmage when he threw that football. The flag came out, the referees conferred, and they picked the flag up, even though somebody had made the correct call. They talked themselves out of it. Montreal continued to drive down the field. They were ultimately stopped short by Saskatchewan, but kicked a field goal to go up 15-11 at halftime. In the big scheme of things, was this the play that decided the game? No, I think Montreal was the better team overall. They would have won regardless. But had that been called properly, there's a very good chance that Saskatchewan could have made that stop and potentially put points of their own on the board before halftime, maybe even entered the intermission with a lead, and that could have changed the flow of that game and potentially the outcome. So it was a significant moment. To their credit, the Saskatchewan Huskies, after the game, said, you know, there were other things that were the reason for a loss. We're not going to whine. We're not going to complain. But it was pretty clear that they didn't agree with the call, and they shouldn't, because it was the wrong call.
The wrong call was definitely made on the play, and I think it could have affected the outcome of the game, considering that, if I am correct, that penalty includes a loss of down. So the Montreal Catabans would have been on third down, punting the football away to Saskatchewan with time on the clock. And by that point in time, Jake Farrell had become a little bit more comfortable in the game, especially after throwing an interception on, I believe it was his first pass attempt of the game. I liked him pushing it down the field, but he seemed to settle in. That said, credit to the Huskies for not making it an excuse after the game. And I do think your point's well taken, JC, that it seemed like the yards came much more easily for Montreal on offense. And let's get into the history of this. The Mexican-Canadian, Pepe Gonzalez, had arguably the best season by a Quebec Conference quarterback in their true first year. Not being a redshirt, not coming out of CJEP, you know, at an older age. Pepe Gonzalez is currently 20 years old. He turns 21 in December. For those wondering and asking, well, those Q players, they're all in their mid-20s by the time they start playing. No, Pepe Gonzalez was 20, okay? That's not that old in the grand scheme of things in U Sports football. And he had a sensational season. And I'll go to the next level. I think there's an argument to be made that he had the best freshman season ever in U Sports history, at least at quarterback. You know, you look at some of the names over the years, and yes, he did become the fourth first-year quarterback to win a Vanier Cup. But even on that list, JC, you laid this out well. You look at St. FX's Terry Dolan in 1966, who was actually in his first year. Then the other three, Evan Hillock in 2021 with the Western Mustangs. Well, he had been at Western in 2020, although there was no season there. So I think we can still call that his first year, but he did have a full year to integrate into Greg Marshall's offense. And then Michael O'Connor was in his first year in 2015 with the University of British Columbia, but he had transferred from Penn State University. Like, that is a whole other different level. I'm not taking anything away from those quarterbacks and their accomplishments, but to me, Pepe Gonzalez, the season that he has and ultimately winning the Vanier Cup plus game MVP stands out to me. You know, I was throwing some names around with Donovan Bennett, who was on the CBC panel alongside the ultra-talented Andy Petrillo. And we were going back through the years and talking about, you know, Eric Glavich, for example. Eric Glavich was in his third year with the St. Mary's Huskies when he got to the Vanier Cup in 2007. He was essentially a redshirt short yardage quarterback for his first couple seasons there. And a lot of people think that he did that in his first year. It was his first year as a full-time starter, but not his first year as a freshman quarterback right out of high school or right out of CJEP. So to me, that's what puts Pepe Gonzalez's season above the rest. He moved here when he was 7 years old. His Mexican parents, they got jobs in Montreal. So he's played up through the Montreal minor football system, and then into CJEP. I believe he played at Andre Grasset's for Tony Idealuca, who is Marco Idealuca's brother. Marco Idealuca is the head coach with the Montreal Catabans, so you can understand how he ended up playing his collegiate football at Montreal. But this season, guys, was just fantastic. And you look at him in the title game, 27 of 33, 344 yards and three touchdowns, no interceptions. And there wasn't even a ball close to being picked off. I believe, if the stats are correct, he only threw one interception in the playoff run, the Quebec Conference semifinal, the Jacques Dussault Cup on the road at Laval. He goes and upsets them through two touchdowns and no interceptions. Then he goes even farther on the road, out east to Halifax, beats the St. Mary's Huskies and travels all the way across the country to Saskatchewan to upset, and I'll call it an upset because I think it was a definite hometown crowd for the Huskies, upset the Huskies in front of their own fans because a lot of people in Saskatchewan thought that that game could be won. Like, this guy's an ultimate road warrior. Unbelievable season. A guy that should draw a lot of attention. And, you know, I've talked to some CFL people and said, okay, it's early. He's only in his first year. But do you think he has CFL upside? And they'll say, well, he definitely needs to get bigger. So Pepe Gonzalez, hopefully you get in the gym, add some pounds onto that frame, because if you continue building on this season, I think you should be able to get a shot in the CFL. It's a number of years away, and there's still some levels in his games that he needs to go to. But this guy beat out Arnaud Desjardins head-to-head in the first ever Jacques Dussault Cup. And there are people in the CFL that believe Arnaud Desjardins should get an opportunity in the Canadian Football League. Should have had one last training camp, and people believe that he's better than a bunch of American quarterbacks that have gotten opportunities over the years in the CFL. So it's definitely a long way down the road, but Pepe Gonzalez, a name to keep an eye on, and just a spectacular first season for the Montreal Catabans.
I'll add this before I let Hodge jump in with his point. And I apologize for my dog barking in the background. He's from Chile, so he doesn't like anyone from Mexico getting credit, but we got to talk about Pepe Gonzalez here. I was so impressed with him after the victory, because he got all the usual questions in the scrum amidst the confetti of, you know, how does this feel? You know, this is your first year. What an accomplishment. And every single question in his second language, no doubt. So perhaps that played a role. But he said, or third language.
Might be his third language.
Just yeah, like third language in English.
Vergara, man.
Exactly. every question he deflected to, I'm going to work hard this off season. I'm going to put on weight and we're going to be back. And at the end, he was asked whether he thinks he can play in the CFL at that very stadium, Mosaic Stadium. And he said, hopefully I'm going to put in the work and hopefully I'll play here for real one day. So he's got the vision. He's not satisfied with being the best first year quarterback or leading his team to one Vanier. This is a guy who knows what he needs to work on. He's heard all of those things you just laid out, Dunk. He knows what he has to do. He wants to get back, and he wants to get to the pro level.
And if he's got to add weight, I mean, obviously Montreal has amazing restaurants of all cuisines. But if he's wanting Mexican food, him and Jose Maltos should hook up. I'm sure that Jose and Pep, they know all the best Mexican restaurants in Montreal. I'm sure there's lots of good ones. They can hook it up. It's Sergio Castillo. Remember, he set us up at the Combine at that Mexican restaurant? I forget what that was in Edmonton. That food was unbelievable. If I lived within walking distance of that restaurant, I would weigh 700 pounds. So putting on weight, I think, is something Pepe will be able to do no problem. But regardless, the best story out of this is probably Pepe. A close second, however, is the alleged vandalization of the Vanier Cup, which was first reported by TVA, and we're working on our own reporting. This story is unbelievable. So just a little teaser for that story when it's up on Three Down Nation, hopefully Thursday, if not Friday at the latest. Wild, wild story out of Quebec.
There are a couple other individuals I think we should touch on with respect to CFL upside. And I just have to make a wisecrack right now, because I think somewhere, if Randy Ambrosi even was watching U Sports football, and there's some people that think he didn't really think it was worth a damn, but he's going, see, my global program worked. Pepe Gonzalez, viva la Mexico. But I digress. We need to look at the Saskatchewan Huskies, because Daniel Weeb had an absolutely fantastic season for them, his last season of U Sports eligibility, and he wasn't at 100% clearly in the Vanier Cup, dealing with a, from what I understand, very tough turf toe injury, as JC's dog's howling at the moon, or perhaps Randy Ambrosi. Perhaps he's howling at Randy Ambrosi. Never say that name again on the podcast. But Daniel Weeb tried to gut through, had four catches for 48 yards. He was a great target for Jake Farrell when Jake Farrell had to take over the starting quarterback job from Anton Amendrude, who we now know is battling cancer. And by all accounts, seems to be in great spirits. So if you Google Three Down Nation, Anton Amendrude, GoFundMe, that page should come up. It's already exceeded the $60,000 goal to help him battle that disease. So I just wanted to make sure that that should be said. And Rough Riders fans, I think at this point, if they don't know, are going to know about Daniel Weeb, because he was very close and made the decision hard on Corey Mace, Jeremy O'Day, and the staff there to release him during training camp. Even though he's smaller and some people might refer to Canadian receivers as shrimps, Daniel Weeb is trying to fight that uphill battle. You know, even in training camp, we wrote a story about him with the loose comparisons to Weston Dressler, just from a size and even an athleticism perspective. Weeb is, I believe, faster and more athletic than Weston Dressler was as an athlete. Now you need to translate that to football, but I do think Weeb has some upside in the Canadian Football League. And then you go to the other side of the ball, linebacker Seth Hundeby and all his athletic traits for his size, you know, around 6'1", he weighed in at the combine at 251 pounds, pop off the page. He won the President's Trophy as the best defensive player in U Sports for the 2025 season, and he left it all out on the field. Pepe Gonzalez was not touched until the fourth quarter when Seth Hundeby got him to the ground two times for sacks. And, you know, I heard a story about Seth Hundeby bumping into Trevor Harris at Mosaic Stadium during Vanier Cup week. And apparently, Trevor Harris has a lot of respect for Seth Hundeby. So that shows you how much Seth Hundeby ingratiated himself to some of the veterans, if that's the proper word, Hodge, grammar police, at Saskatchewan Rough Riders training camp when he was there in 2025. So I think there's lots of upside for Hundeby. Two Riders draft picks that really had standout seasons for the University of Saskatchewan. And I don't want to make this a whole Saskatchewan thing, but I felt like their performances were worth noting.
That's fair. And if I was Trevor Harris, I would be very thankful that I didn't have to play against Seth Hundeby, because he's a monster who can fly around at 6'3" and 250 pounds. So there's not a lot of guys, Canadian or American, like that in the CFL who run that at like the hat, how he does at that size. It's just, it's remarkable.
People might look and say, well, Seth Hundeby was selected in the fourth round. I think it was, what, 31st overall?
I think so.
But
man,
if you don't know, he decided to go back to school to finish his engineering degree. So if Seth Hundeby came out and was going to play football right away, he would have been a bona fide first round pick with those measurables. Or I should say, it would have been a surprise if he would have fallen out of the first round.
Yeah, I'm not sure I would have gone so strong as first round, but certainly top two rounds, right? Like he would have been a guy who's in that top 15, top 18 conversation for sure, just because you don't see guys like that coming out of U Sports with his measurables and his size. The fact that he was so focused on academics, I think, frankly, may have prevented him from getting an NFL look, because with some of those measurables, if he wanted to do some of the all-star circuits and have gone that route last season, he might have gotten some looks because of just how big and how physical and how athletic he is. It's now time for JC's random neglister, and we're going to go with another quarterback because I just had some success with predicting a quarterback who was going to be signed by a CFL team. And we'll stick in Saskatchewan with the Rough Riders neglist. We know that Trevor Harris seems like he's going to be back, but he's going to be 40 years old. We don't know. What if he retires? What's the future of the quarterback position in Saskatchewan? Well, let me offer a small school option for you. Andrew Edwards out of Henderson State. That's a Division II school in the town of Arkadelphia, Arkansas. That is a real place, not a fictional place. Arkadelphia, Arkansas, for the Henderson State Reddies. He is 6'3", 224 pounds, a big, thick body guy who was a 4-year starter for Henderson State, put up over 10,000 career passing yards, 97 touchdowns, and just 20 interceptions in his college career at 65% completion percentage. Over 1,400 yards rushing as well, and 23 touchdowns on the ground. At his size, he can scoot a little bit. He'll make guys miss, and he'll run through somebody's face if he has to. He is a hard out because of his size and his strength and his mobility. He can make guys miss in the pocket. He can bulldoze over guys. He can evade sacks. It's really impressive some of the things he's able to do at that level of competition physically. And then he's got just easy arm talent. He puts it on the money with ease, can throw down the field, deep shots, wide side outs. He has all the physical measurables that you'd like to see from a potential CFL quarterback with that wider field having to make all of those throws. Because he's playing at a smaller school, he's a redshirt senior now, a finalist for the Harlan Hill Trophy, I don't think he's going to get substantial NFL looks just because of where he's coming from. If the Saskatchewan Rough Riders can get this guy under contract, I think there's some upside there in terms of somebody who could be a short yardage quarterback initially, but also grow into something more. As we know, Trevor Harris came from the perennial college football powerhouse that is Edinburgh. So don't discount these small school guys.
So did Jeremy O'Day. Who knew? Edinburgh to Saskatchewan Rough Riders pipeline. It's a real thing. It's now time for Hodges Heritage Moment. On this day in 2000, Louis Pisaglia played his final CFL game in the 88th Grey Cup, ending a career that spanned a league record 408 contests. The 25-year veteran finished his final season 40 of 44 on field goals. That's a 90.9% conversion rate. That's amazing. Which was actually the best of his career. Apparently he retired too soon. The Vancouver native was inducted into the Canadian Football Hall of Fame in 2004 and still holds the record for most games played in CFL history. We'll throw it to JC in a second. I just want to say one of the coolest things about covering the 2024 Grey Cup was sitting in that beautiful press box at BC Play Stadium and looking down and just like just standing there chatting with people wearing this super dope BC Lions jacket is just Louis Passaglia, like just chatting with friends and seeing people. And I'm like, man, I'm getting starstruck. Like I'm coming to Grey Cup, but the person I'm most starstruck by is sitting in the crowd, 15 seats in front of me. Like it was unbelievable just watching Louis there. He's basically, I mean, he should be the mayor of Vancouver as far as I'm concerned. What an unbelievable guy, unbelievable player. JC, I know you sit in that press box all the time, and I know Louis sits close to you there. What other memories do you have potentially of growing up with Louis with the BC Lions?
Well, Louis was retired by the time I really became a CFL fan, but I have loved being able to sit in those seats and see that uniquely CFL aspect of a guy who I would argue is the most iconic player in franchise history for the Lions. Even though he's a kicker, he is regarded in that way in BC, and he's sitting in the crowd, right? That's where his season seats are. He's not in a suite. He's not anywhere else. He is with the common man in his season seats every week. But I will say this, he doesn't not have privileges, because I have seen that man come up back into the press box, up into the suites. Whenever there's some nice free grub, he's able to come up and grab it because he's got the Louis Passaglia pass. He can go wherever he pleases.
Let's move on to the 3-minute drill, shall we?
My Canadian quarterback of the week obviously is going to be Pepe Gonzalez, the Mexican-Canadian. Viva la Mexico. So we already talked about it. Yes, 3-minute drill. Head Creighton Trophy winner and former star Wilfrid Laurier Golden Hawks receiver Ethan Jordan, who, by the way, had back-to-back 1,000-yard seasons in U Sports, which is unbelievable because, for the people that don't know, they only play 8 regular season games. And this guy in 2024 and 2025 had over 1,000 yards receiving. Unbelievable. He signed back with the Ottawa Redblacks, went to training camp with them in 2025. Ottawa released him to go back to play at Laurier in his final season. So, Hodge, do you think he'll make a big impact in the nation's capital in 2026?
I think he could, right? Nick Mardner missed all of this season due to injury, but he's a first-round pick. Keelan White's a first-round pick. They got the makings of a solid Canadian contingent in that receiving core in the nation's capital. Should be noted, Ryan Dinwiddie's always started 2 or 3 Canadian receivers in Toronto. I'd imagine he wants to continue doing that now in Ottawa. The BC Lions unveiled that the team will host the Stampeders and Elks, respectively, when the Leos host their 2 touchdown Kelowna games in 2026. Are you excited to head to the Apple Bowl to cover those contests?
I am fired up. It's going to be a wonderful week of action. I think it probably makes sense for me to stay up there the entire time and bask in the sun, right, guys? That we're good with that? Sit lakeside up in the Okanagan? No, it's going to be a good time, and it's great that it's the Stamps and the Elks that are coming, because we'll get some Alberta traffic as well from some of those fan bases. Marshawn Lynch FaceTimed Corey Mace during Saskatchewan's Grey Cup parade. Do you wish he FaceTimed you during the podcast, Doug?
No, I really don't. I don't get the infatuation with Beast Mode, to be quite honest.
Really?
Wow.
I don't get it.
Wow, we got Justin Dunk hate happening right now. Directed.
Not hate, I just don't get the infatuation with him.
Why is it because you don't eat Skittles? Maybe that's the common denominator.
No, that has nothing to do with it. I don't get it.
I think he's very gregarious. I think he's very charming. And obviously, he was a hell of a player. And apparently, he was very smart with his money. So I think it's all good to like Beast Mode. I like Beast Mode.
I'm not saying I don't like him. I just don't get the infatuation with him.
But that's fair enough.
The Bishop's Gators are moving back to the RSEQ. That would be the Quebec University Football Conference in U Sports, after an 8-season run in the Atlantic University Sport Conference. Does that make sense?
It makes all the sense in the world. Bishops is like a 13-minute drive to Sherbrooke and a 12-hour drive to Acadia. And yet they've been driving to the Maritimes this whole time. It's ridiculous. It's not sustainable. It's bad for the athletes. It costs too much money. I've talked to people in the AUS. They don't like it. So yes, it makes sense. And by the way, we're now back to six teams in the RCQ, four in the AUS. When you had 5-5, someone's always on a bye week. Like, that doesn't make sense. So I don't know why this ever happened. It was 8 years ago. I don't remember. Whatever the reason was, it was not good enough. This is now correct. 6-4, RSCQ, AUS. This is better for everybody. Keon Hatcher has made it clear to the BC Lions he expects a steep raise after leading the CFL in receiving yards in 2025. Do you think he'll get it?
I think he will get a raise of some degree, and he deserves one because he's taken essentially less than market value over the last couple of years, because right after his last tremendous receiving season, he tore his Achilles in the West final and therefore was not able to get fair market value for what his talent level would have been. Now he has that chance. The question is, will the Lions be able to meet his price tag considering what they're paying Nathan Rourke and Justin McInnes and Matthew Betts, and what they're going to have to pay guys like Jarrell Broxton, who are also free agents, and you could argue might be more important to the success of the team than having another stalwart receiver. Jake Mayer is contemplating his future after serving as Saskatchewan's backup QB in 2025. Do you think he'll get a chance to start in 2026?
There's some quarterback positions that would have to be changed out, I think, for that to happen. You know, we talked about it earlier with pending free agents and the possibility for movement. So there's a chance, but if Bo Levi Mitchell re-signs in Hamilton, which we expect, if Trevor Harris re-signs in Saskatchewan, which we expect, and Jeremy O'Day, the general manager, doesn't sense that he's going to retire, that doesn't really leave any seats open. Even if Cody Fajardo doesn't want to be in Edmonton, he goes back there because it's the only starting spot, then I have a hard time seeing where that could potentially be with Jake Mayer, unless something unexpected happens with another franchise. The one caveat that I'll throw out there is Jake Mayer has a tie to which current head coach and general manager?
That would be Ryan Dinwiddie.
Ryan Dinwiddie.
So, as we all know, you need two quarterbacks to win in the Canadian Football League. If Ryan Dinwiddie's perhaps not sold on Drew Brown, you can still have him there in Ottawa. Perhaps you restructure the contract, or I'll leave them to figure that out. You bring in Jake Mayer, and Jake Mayer might look at it and say, well, I have a pathway here that I can actually envision to being the starter. Whereas in Saskatchewan, if Trevor Harris is healthy, he's going to be the starter in 2026. So lots to play out, but that's one possibility that I've had at least one source mention to me. Longtime Winnipeg sports writer Paul Friesen, who is an absolute beauty, had former Blue Bombers head coach Mike Kelly introduce him at the annual Canadian Football Media Hall of Fame breakfast at Grey Cup. How cool was it? And how unique, I should say, I think, was the idea?
Yeah, most members of the media are just introduced by like a longtime colleague or a friend, or even a family member. And Freeze, in his ever wise, ever interesting method, decided, no, I'm going to have a video introduction from the coach with whom I beefed the hardest. And that's Mike Kelly back from 2009 with all the craziness around the Winnipeg Blue Bombers that season. We have a full article about this, and in that article is a link to the Winnipeg Sun, who posted the full video from Kelly. And I will say, while we're talking about Freeze, I've been around the CFL beat now in some way, shape, or form for about 10 years. I have yet to find a reporter who consistently asks questions as good as Paul Friese. The questions are always fair, but they punch. They're always critical. But again, not in a personal way. Part of the reason why Kelly was so upset with Friesen was he took it all very personally. Now with the gift of hindsight and 16 years to kind of clear the air, Kelly is now seeing, okay, none of this was personal. Friesen was doing his job, and I let it get to me. So Friese, well worth the Hall of Fame induction, very deserving, as was, of course, Judy Owen, who also went in, longtime reporter for the Canadian Press. Former Heisman Trophy winner Andre Ware said NCAA quarterbacks Tommy Castellanos and Diego Pavia would make great CFL QBs. Is he correct?
Well, Tommy Castellanos is intriguing, but I'm not sure I'm as high on him as Andre Ware. He's on the Hamilton Tiger Cats neck list, for the record. But Diego Pavia and what he's done at Vanderbilt and his desire to keep playing, so much so that he sued the NCAA to make sure that his JUCO eligibility didn't count against his NCAA eligibility, would suggest that he'd be a guy who's open to playing north of the border to keep his pro football career alive if the NFL doesn't pan out for him. And he can move, he can throw the ball, he's accurate, he's got fire. I'd love to see him up north with the Winnipeg Blue Bombers, who currently hold his rights.
You can scrap this last one, JC, because we've already talked about Seth Hundby.
Yes.
But I, for one, am intrigued about the possibility of Diego Pavia potentially coming to the CFL. That guy has completely turned around the Vanderbilt program and seems to just have this moxie about him. Now, he would have to prove it, just like potentially he would have to if he got an NFL opportunity. But let's not compare the money that he could be making in the NCAA to what he might get starting out in the Canadian Football League, okay?
Fair enough.
Much different for him to go through that lawsuit process, because that could be worth hundreds of thousands of U.S. dollars, if not millions, compared to him potentially. And I guess he doesn't necessarily have to agree to the rookie contract, but coming up here for the minimum, you know, in and around $80,000 probably is what he could make in his first year. That said, you could negotiate more. We've seen it happen with Johnny Manziel, but Diego Pavia would be a great get for the Canadian Football League. So I think he's definitely worth keeping an eye on.
In watching Diego's Twitter feed, he I believe recently threw water on this. Like, he claimed that the lawsuit is not still ongoing. So I think there's more reporting that needs to be done around this to ensure all the information is accurate. But I think Pavia could be an intriguing CFL guy. Yes, the NFL is more open than ever to smaller quarterbacks, but he's sub 6 foot, right? And when that's the case, it's just always going to be a tougher sled going it in the NFL versus potentially coming up north.
Yeah, my point was less financial as it is. He just seems like a guy where money is not the only motivation for him. I'm sure it's part of it, but boy, he loves playing football. And at a certain point, if that NFL door closes, I think he's still going to love playing football, and there's going to be an opportunity potentially waiting for him in Winnipeg.
I can see it. And don't forget, sign up for that 3Down Nation email newsletter. Get all the goods to your inbox directly on a daily basis. Go to 3downnation.com, top right-hand corner, put your email in there. And as we work on this new era, let's call it, with Harvard Media, there's going to be some more bells and whistles added down the line. So get in so you can be there to say that you were the first before it actually became really cool.
Running connects us. The early mornings, the personal bests, the shared finish lines. At Marathon Sports, we're proud to be part of that journey with you. Our team helps you find shoes that fit your stride, apparel that feels good, and gear that keeps you moving. Stop by one of 28 New England locations or shop online at marathonsports.com. Marathon Sports, inspiring movement in everyone.